Hey, are you ready to create reliable revenue and master every detail of your hosting business? If you want to avoid compromising all those hospitality details that you love, but still approach hosting like the business it is, we created a free class just for you. Set aside 45 minutes. We promise it's worth your time. And go watch our value-packed workshop where we go over how to master every detail of your hosting business with our foolproof hosting business mastery method that will help you avoid hosting burnout. Growing, where simply starting your hosting business isn't always easy, but it can be simple. We'll help you avoid the three big mistakes that are keeping you stuck, tired, and overwhelmed as a short-term rental host so that you have a powerful revenue stream you can actually rely on.
If you're ready to take your hosting to the next level, head on over to thanksforvisiting.me/workshop to watch this on-demand training. Or send us a DM on Instagram with the word workshop. We'll send you the link and most likely a video DM. We love those. Again, that's thanksforvisiting.me/workshop.
You're listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. We believe hosting with heart is at the core of every successful short-term rental. With Annette's background in business operation and Sarah's extensive hospitality management and interior design experience, this dynamic duo has welcomed more than 2,000 guests from 25 countries, earning them over $500,000 and garnering them over 650 five-star reviews. Now they're ready to share creative ways for your listing to stand out, to serve your guests and be profitable. Each episode will have knowledgeable guests who bring value to the short-term rental industry, or Annette and Sarah will share stories about their own experiences so you can implement actionable improvements to your own rentals. Whether you're experienced, new, or nervous to start your own short-term rental, we promise you'll feel right at home. Here are your hosts, Annette and Sarah.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to another great episode. My name is Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are...
Thanks for visiting. We are going to have a down and dirty conversation about all things legal. Get excited. Nettie and I are going to make this fun. But before we do that, we're going to start this episode off like we do each and every week. And that's sharing one of you and your amazing spaces that you're using our hashtag on, STR Share Sunday. We share that not only here on the podcast, all of our listeners, but it's also getting a shout out on YouTube. And on our Instagram.
And on our blog. And on our email.
Honestly,
come on, this is free marketing, people.
Marketing. Who are we sharing this week?
Today, we are sharing at Coastal Cedar Sanctuary. Again, that's at Coastal Cedar Sanctuary. And they're located in Rockaway Beach, Oregon. Uh-huh. And man, I want to go there. I'm looking at all the photos. Here's the key takeaway that I love from this. Number one, they have an outdoor sauna. I think these are becoming more and more popular.
And they're actually not that insanely expensive.
Yes. And man, I want to go there right now. So that is something I've noticed more and more people are putting in. The obviously, the hot tub is kind of the old school amenity, but the outdoor sauna is the new kid on the block that seems to be crushing it, the barrel saunas. And then one thing that they did in their listing that I really, really loved is in their more info, they had four different perspectives of why you might be visiting. And I love this. It says, visit our sanctuary with your feminine friends for a spa weekend. Hunker down here on a stormy coastal evening reading a book with your love. Bring your fishing buddies and load up on salmon and crab, or stay with the family, friends, and explore the coastline with the kids. So they kind of did a really good job of painting a picture
for every group type.
Every group type who could come and enjoy their space. So well done. And also, I love it. They do have a side note there. There is not air conditioning in their space, but it's very rare in the Oregon coast. So they just want to let travelers know ahead of time, but then also know, hey, it's no big deal. It's not really what we do here. So yeah.
Well,
I love
when
that.
In Rome.
Yes. So well done. Everybody go give them some love on the gram and on the OTAs. All right, Sarah, I get excited about all of our episodes, but this one's kind of different for us. It's something that we encourage everyone,
yes,
to make this person a part of their team.
Yes.
And we kind of get some grumbling sometimes of maybe it's not the most fun team member to...
but gosh, are they important?
They're so important. And maybe this person will tell you guys how often I text him and like, can you talk? I have a question. But Sarah, go ahead. Let's intro our guest today.
Yes. So today we are chatting with Scott Brown, who is an attorney from Columbus, Ohio, and that is where Annette and I operate our businesses. And he specializes in business and intellectual property law for startups and entrepreneurs, but he does so much more, and so does his office. So Scott, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Good to be here.
All right. So Scott, kind of just let our listeners know a little bit about your background, and then we'll weave in how Sarah and I started working with you and how we teamed up.
Yeah. So I actually grew up in Columbus, and my family were all musicians, my grandparents owned a chain of music stores, and my dad owned his own drum business. And I ended up going to music school in Boston. But at Berklee College of Music, they had a music business program. And I realized pretty quickly at Berklee that I wasn't going to be the guy in music. But I enjoyed the music business classes and I did well in them. And a lot of teachers were lawyers. So I was initially kind of interested in being an entertainment lawyer. But as I kind of pursued that, I realized what I really wanted to do was, and this is very similar to entertainment law. I mean, you're mostly putting together businesses, dealing with intellectual property, helping people out with their vision. And I realized what I really wanted to do was basically be a lawyer for all the entrepreneurs in my family. And so I'm not super entrepreneurial myself, but I love supporting them and being a part of it. There's a certain risk tolerance you have to be an entrepreneur. In fact, I think almost not even tolerance, like chasing it at times. So, you know, it's super fun to work with entrepreneurs, and the firm I'm at, Anthony Law, is a small firm, and we really focus on startups and entrepreneurs. Most firms either do everything or they focus on a type of law, but we really focus on type of client. So, you know, all our clients are people with big ideas. We help them build them, everything from traditional businesses like restaurants, bars, retail, to online businesses, people with apps, people doing all kinds of stuff. And from there, you know, most of our clients, you know, if they're entrepreneurs, they're always coming up with new ideas. If they start to make money, first thing they do, they start buying real estate. So of course we do quite a bit of real estate, a lot of commercial, and then a lot of our clients, you know, just get into it for investment purposes. So we help them with that. I focus more on corporate work and contract work and working with startups and people creating a lot of IP. But a couple of the other attorneys at our office do more of the real estate stuff. So working with you guys, I started working with you mostly on kind of the legal aspects of thanks for visiting. Mm-hmm. And then as you kind of built into wanting to invest in real estate, we talked about it and I helped you with it. And we had some other help at the firm. So I listened to your last podcast about this where you talked about your lawyer, but really it was your team of lawyers, which makes you sound really big and fancy.
It does. So good. And that's, so listeners, if you hadn't heard that episode, we talked about Annette and I are doing our first real estate deal together. We've mm-hmm. each purchased real estate separately in our lives, but Annette did on her own back in the day, and I do it with my husband, who I'm like legally bound to. So with a business partner, it was different and we didn't know what the heck we were doing. And so, yeah.
Yeah. I want listeners, like everything that we're talking about today, I really want you to understand that the relationship, and we'll get into this later, but the relationship that you have with your counsel, it is so important, because Scott and I have worked together for, man, maybe almost a decade now in so many different capacities and agreements in this like entrepreneurial world. But when you find someone that you're aligned with, I think it really just makes things so much more comfortable, and you can really like explain the situation in depth. And Sarah and I tell everybody all the time, your attorney needs to be someone that you can share your future goals with, because we've got to let Scott know what our plans are with our business. Thanks for visiting. What our goals are with our real estate portfolio. There's not just a one and done contract and like see you later. So like Sarah just said, Scott started with us when we were building this business. And I want everybody to know we invested in our attorney before we ever made a dollar. So this was, you know, Scott was making money before we were making money, but we knew that we had to have our partnership agreement in place before we grew from that.
Okay, Scott. So if in our instance where, you know, we had to purchase the property one way, and then we have a mortgage another way, what if someone needs to transfer the property into an LLC after they purchase it? Like how does that work?
Got it. So it's very common to buy the property in your name and have the mortgage in your name, and then transfer the deed via quitclaim to an LLC, but keep the mortgage in your name. You're not going to be able to transfer the mortgage most of the time. And if you talk to a mortgage company, they're going to tell you you can't do it. But there are situations where you can transfer the deed without the mortgage, which will have the benefit of, you know, getting in the LLC for tax purposes, for asset separation. You know, if you have a partnership, dealing with it that way. But you know, that is a very technical action, and you definitely want to work with an attorney to figure out if you can do it, make sure it works, and to have it done, because it has to be deeded as well. It's not something you want to do yourself. So it can be done sometimes depending on the situation. So I would recommend talking to an attorney about that.
So Scott, what if though, like, you know, Annette and I have been working together for 2 years and we really get along. We haven't had any issues. Like, do we really need to like spend the money on an operating? Can we just like print something off that's pretty basic and just say, hey, I promise not to screw you over? Or like, Why is it so important to get something that's dialed into this transaction?
So for you guys, you know, you have three people that are, you guys are going to jointly own the property, but you're putting in very different things to it. You know, you didn't just split it three ways. You're not splitting it in terms of the exact same services that everyone's doing. You know, you each had your role to play. And, you know, things can go wrong in partnerships, and it happens all the time. And it's, you know, I see it more than anybody, because when things go wrong, they come to us. And so the goal up front is to figure out a way to set everything out so that in case anything goes wrong, you know how you're dealing with it. But for the most part, the stuff we're a lot of times we're dealing with is, what if something goes wrong? How are we going to, what are the rules? You know, if things are going well and everything's operating as it should, you're not going to consult your partnership agreement, your operating agreement very often, because you all understand what you're doing and everything's good. But it's when things go wrong, and having, you know, having the rules decided in advance gives you both clarity, and it can also avoid problems to begin with. But then if you do have a problem, you know how to deal with it. So, you know, for you guys, it was important to figure out, you know, set out specifically what each of your duties were, and then very much so figure out keeping track of the money you're spending. Right. And then also how decisions are going to be made. And then what happens if somebody, you know, what if, you know, you've got money in this thing? What if one of you has some sort of catastrophe and needs to get out? How are you going to deal with that? Most likely you would work it out amongst yourselves, but if you can't, you know, we put some stuff in there to help with that. Also, you know, we have to deal with all the bad stuff. Like, what happens if somebody dies? What do you do with the ownership? And in Ohio, you can actually put, you know, one of the things when it comes to, you know, I'm not going to get into wills and trusts and estates and all that, but the big thing is you want to avoid probate, avoid it being complicated. And so any chance you have, whether it's your bank account, your investment accounts, and even in Ohio, you can name somebody in your operating agreement who the beneficiary would be of your ownership. So I push you guys to do that, even though nobody wants to talk about this stuff at all, you know? But that's, again, that's kind of the goal. What happens if something goes wrong? You know, we can deal with it early. So you guys each named a person. But what was funny is, so there's three of you each, and you guys were one third, one third, one third. And, you know, we even set out some of the decisions to take all of you to agree, you know, selling the property is going to take all of you guys, I think. But Annette wanted to name her sister, but then her sister owns a third.
Right.
So if that were to happen, then Annette's sister would own two thirds, which would put Sarah in a minority. And suddenly you've got this weird dynamic when really there's two people. So Sarah brought it up, and, you know, I think it's interesting, because just bringing it up could have felt like a risk a little bit to say, hey, wait a second, I don't want to feel like I'm being treated unfairly, but it was smart, and your partners recognized it. So, you know, we were able to kind of put a provision in that says, you know, anything you transfer, there's no voting rights with it. So
right,
if one of you were to die, then you guys would have like a 50-50.
Yeah, right. Because what's interesting there, listeners, I don't have a significant other. So even if I didn't give it to my sister, I would probably give it to another family member. So Sarah's kind of odd man out, if you will, whoever I decided to put on the property, because it would most likely be a niece or a nephew or another sibling. So there would still be kind of like familial ties there where Sarah's like, wait, that still feels a little disjointed. Right. And Sarah, I think that's what's been really important about our agreement too is, I mean, I'm just imagining Sarah's in a different boat of like, wait, these are still sisters. Like they could like gang up on me, if you will, you know? So no, that's why it's really important to like, and important for us to make sure that that stuff is out there because you will have that feeling. And I've been in partnerships before. I've been in other partnerships where things felt, you know, when things feel lopsided, it doesn't feel good. And so if you can have the documents at least there to help it, mm-hmm. I think I'm speaking for you, but you know, that's important because it's like, wait a second.
I'm not going to lie. I asked my husband, Nick, I was like, Nick, I feel like, is it okay if I ask this question? I don't want to like offend anybody, but what will happen then? Because I want to be able to have equal say. Yeah. Right now we have. And so he's like, no, just ask her. Listen, if Annette's going to get offended by that question after all this time, then you know, we're treading on thin ice.
Well,
anyway.
It's funny. I actually thought about it too, but then I was like, if I give it to anybody else, it's just a random person.
No, you should be able to give it to who you want to.
Well, my sister knows about the property. So I'm like, it makes more sense to give it to her than just like one of my other siblings that have no skin in the game on the property.
Yeah. And Annette texted me and she was pretty mad and I talked her down. So.
Yeah. No, well,
I mean,
not
but
at
you,
all.
You know, it's funny. Like I've definitely worked with people. Like, I doubt you guys will have any issues. You know, you've got the right mindset about it and, you know, you're seasoned entrepreneurs and get along, but it definitely happens where people have disputes and it's no fun.
Well, and that's important. Like, you know, like I said earlier, Scott and I have worked together even before Thanks for Visiting. And like some of the stuff that Scott helped me with a decade ago has, man, the time and energy and money that was spent there has paid, you know, just unbelievable dividends for things that like I could have swept under the rug and not, and just kind of went with the flow, you know, gone with the flow. But I made sure that my counsel was walking me through situations that I had no idea. Cause I kind of had rose colored glasses on that, hey, everything's going to be amazing forever, you know, because like what Scott just said, you don't want to think about someone passing away. You don't want to think about life throwing us curveballs and hey, that cash would be really important right now. That stuff happens and it's so much better to have those agreements beforehand when that situation isn't, you know, imminent and right in your face. It's like, let's think about these things, you know, when it's from a distance and we have clear heads and there's no emotions.
And it's black and white.
And it's black and white. And the stuff hasn't happened yet. It's just so much more clarity. And you can look back and know, we made those decisions a long time ago.
And Scott, you would say, even if for our listeners, even if there's not a real estate deal, what if our listeners are looking to get in partnerships and starting a hosting company together with someone? Right. You know what I mean? Like this applies in any sort of business partnership, correct?
Yeah. And what's interesting about this calling it a real estate deal is it's kind of a hybrid because it's more of a service company. Right. I mean, you guys are actually actively doing things for the property. There's going to be decisions made all the time. You're putting money into it. You may put more money into it later. You may change your strategy with how you're renting it. Typically, you know, if it's a commercial building, you know, you're going to get into a 3-year lease and for the most part, it's not that much extra work, decision-making, you know, it's pretty straightforward. But so for you guys, it was more like a service company. And for any company that's operating where there's day-to-day operations and there's multiple partners, it's really important to have that stuff set out. And, you know, it's really, it's very context-based. Like if people have worked together for a long time, you know, we might not be as strict or defined with the agreement, but if there's any risk that, you know, people have very different relationships. You know, there could be, and every business, you could have two people doing all the work and then a few people who own a little piece, or it could be employees, or it could be investors, or, you know, there's so many different ways it can be done. But it is important. I guess what I'm hesitant to say everybody's got to have this 50-page operating agreement for any business.
Sure.
You know, it's context-based. And it's that it's important to kind of work with somebody that's understanding what you're doing and will help you do what's right for you at the time, not do too much, not do too little. So I guess I'm kind of circling back around to the building your team aspect.
And being thoughtful about it. It's not just like this, like, yes, you have an operating agreement. That's the end of the story. It depends on so many factors.
Right. Exactly. Like, so you can go form a company with LegalZoom and they'll give you an operating agreement. And there are certainly situations where something like that is going to work for you. You know, if you're the only owner, if you're 50-50 and husband, wife, it's not going to matter that much. But if you've got partners and you really need to define services, the money, you know, then it's good to have, you know, somebody actually listen to you and talk to you about what you're doing and give you something that matches what you need.
Right. And for me, it was important that I protected this relationship with Annette because yeah. I'm thinking so much bigger than this one house, right? Like, mm-hmm. and so for me, it's like, I don't want to take any chances. It's like, well, let's just go, if we ever needed to, let's go back to this thing that we invested in jointly and mm-hmm. see what we said back then. And I think some people are so afraid of putting, they're going to ruin their relationship with their friend or whatever. I think it's the thing that saves you.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, let's talk about that.
Better in the end, yeah.
We haven't talked about this. We can make changes to it also,
yeah,
right?
That's
like that's the other part too. Listeners, like let's say, pardon me, a year down the road, I don't know, something changes, like Scott was saying. Let's say we take it to a long-term rental and, you know, just roles change. There's just different things. We can make an amendment to this and switch it up. But I know, I will say, after these episodes of us talking about our partnership, so many of you have written in, like asking, like you have family or friends that want to go in on properties with you. This is the stuff, like it can be fun because now, like for Sarah and I, we're like, wait, okay, do we want to do this again and again and again? And now we've kind of... We did a lot of that thought work and how things are structured that if we want to just repeat it again, we can just go to Scott and say, hey, we're buying another property. We're going to do it exactly same setup as our current one. Let's make that happen again.
Yeah, we'll it'll be a lot changes. Faster and a lot cheaper because you're just repeating it. So yeah,
right.
you went through the efforts the first time and then every time after that, it's much quicker.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about finding a Scott though. Because like, as you guys can tell, Scott, Sarah and I have a really great relationship with Scott and I use him personally. Sarah uses him for some other things. Scott, let's walk through because you are super responsive. You are open to listening to all of our concerns that we have, whatever they are. Talk to our listeners about...
You're willing to come on our podcast.
Yeah, you're willing to come on our podcast. Hopefully our social media here soon. But can you... Talk us through, like, when our listeners are interviewing an attorney, what are some things that they should be on the lookout for?
Yeah, so there's really three main pillars of support service that every business needs, and it's legal, accounting, and insurance, and you really need them all, and they all kind of interact, lawyers and accountants especially, but also with insurance as well, and you know. What you need is one that kind of understands your business. So I think the first thing you would want when you're vetting a lawyer is that they either are interested in your business and you, or have experience with it already. You know, for my firm, when I talk to a client, I'm generally not interested in doing one-off work. I'm trying to build a relationship and build an ongoing client. That's both better for me from a business perspective, but also from a personal fulfillment perspective. And it's better for the client as well. So, you know, I'm always, you know, when I'm working with someone new, I don't want to just do one thing for them. I want to help them build and keep going for the long term. I don't know if everybody's like that. You know, I'm under the impression a lot of people aren't. And so, you know, there are definitely, I would look for people who are more inclined to kind of want to build a relationship. And that are interested in what you're doing because so much of this is context-based and real-world based. You know, the law and the rules inform what I'm doing, but also so does, you know, all my experiences at other jobs and working and seeing other businesses grow. And, it's more than just what the law says in your situation. It's understanding what you need. So I would look for that in an attorney. You know, there's a lot to be said about, you know, size of firm, you know, the bigger the firm, more expensive it's going to be. You know, responsiveness is a big issue in the legal community. You know, we have these CLEs, these continuing legal education courses we have to do, like 12 hours a year in Ohio, and I think most states. And one of them is always, you know, you have to do ethics classes. And literally the first half hour of every ethics class is the teacher telling everyone that lawyers have a problem responding. And it's true, you know? So if you can, you know, find somebody that is responsive, you know, Annette, you know, I'm willing to meet people wherever they're at in terms of communication. So I get people that text me. I have Slack open for 3 or 4 clients that use Slack.
Oh, wait, Slack? You haven't told us about this.
No. New channel.
New Slack channel.
Yeah, everybody's on Slack.
Okay.
But so, I mean, I'm trying not to turn this into like, you know, anything about me.
But
like,
I have a question, though.
Some of the things that you seem to appreciate are you know, availability and understanding your business and goals. And
well, I will tell you, listeners, one thing that's really important to me is I feel comfortable that if I have one small question, if I have a question, I don't hold myself back from asking Scott, even if it's like I had him look over like an NDA the other day, like something that I got, like I now feel really comfortable that he is part of our team. I want, if there is even a fraction, like a thought that I should have like legal eyes on this, I reach out to him. He makes me feel comfortable in that I'm not being silly or, you know, downplaying it. So anything that I think, wait a second, I send it over now. And that was not me years prior, but I'm that comfortable now. But let me ask you this, Scott. If I do know there, this is when our relationship first started with you. You know, there's a lot of attorneys like, hey, XYZ retainer right out of the gate, just to work with people. And I respect that. But let's say our listeners, like let's say they're, you know, the retainer's $5,000 and like, I don't even know if I have $5,000 worth of work right now and they still have to spend that retainer. Do you have any advice on that?
If you called somebody about a short-term rental business and they said $5,000 retainer, they're probably just trying not to talk to you anymore.
Okay.
That's like the tactic. Like if you get a this is, you know, inside baseball legal work, you get somebody calls you with some insane, risky business idea, and it just sounds like a terrible idea. You don't want to do it. You know,
give them
$10,000 retainer.
Okay.
You should not put this in the podcast. It's terrible.
Okay.
No, I actually think that's not. I think it's because, well, that's a good question too. Is I don't know how to, like, if someone were to call an attorney and say, I just want to see if I feel good talking to you.
Right. Yeah. Is there like a 15 minute, do you guys offer that?
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah. We don't charge for a consultation. Some people do. It's, you know, it's something we talk about at our firm. Like it's how we decided to go about doing business. But at the same time, you know, we're working with startups and entrepreneurs and a lot of times people, you know, really great clients long-term don't start out big.
Yeah.
So, you know, we want to talk to people and a lot of times if we can help somebody in 15 minutes and that's all they need, like I'm going to do that rather than try to get them in the system, pay a little bit of money. You know, it's easier to just help people and, you know, help the community. I mean, we're service providers in a community, you know, it's not just cash.
And I love what Scott just said right there. They are also service-based business in a community. And like, I will be honest, I know Scott because a referral from a dear friend of mine. And like I actually, before I started working with Scott, I did interview 3 or 4 other attorneys and I had them do work for me. And like, it wasn't a fit. And I finally like reached out to my own friends like, hey, who are you using? And it was so much better of a fit. So I've been there, done that of like trying to work with some other people. And finally, again, it goes back to referral. So ask your family and friends, who do you work with? I think that's probably the best bet. And how much referral work do you get, Scott? Probably a ton, I'm sure. Is that commonplace?
Yeah. And I would say the same thing I was thinking that, you know, it's not just Googling a certain type of lawyer, but talk to people you know, people that have had good experiences. And, you know, your friend that referred you that we ended up working with, he didn't even know me in that capacity. He knew me from, you know, the music scene. He knew I was a lawyer. I mean, literally, that's how we connected. So it's not always just about the service, but about, you know,
the person that you are.
Kind of.
No, I think it's a lot. I mean, so that's why that initial consultation, it's not necessarily like your test, like where'd they go to school and like, who have you helped? Yes, that matters. But also if you feel comfortable bearing your soul, because you kind of need to, right? You kind of need to tell you like, this idea is insane. I need you to come on this ride with me and tell me if, not even give me business advice, but just make sure I'm not going to get in trouble.
anything you tell an attorney is protected by attorney-client privilege. So
there you go.
You can automatically feel comfortable telling them anything.
Yeah. There you go.
And then hopefully they give back and you feel good about it. But
yeah. Cool.
I have one more question, Scott. Do you literally every day, do you see different deal structures set up from A to Z? Like just all the different wild stuff. I just want to encourage our listeners, like whatever your like idea is, whatever your structure is, mm-hmm. there should be an attorney out there that wants to work with you and make it happen.
Right. Well, you know, like for your operating agreement, we have forms we start with. We don't want to reinvent the wheel.
Right.
You know, the reason for legalese is that, you know, specific language has been vetted by courts to be predictable and it means this. I mean, there's a reason it's written like that. It's not just to be archaic and difficult.
Right.
You know, if you're comfortable, once you get comfortable with it, you know, it's predictable. It's written in a way that, you know, kind of airtight.
Yep.
You know, and for language to not have any variation in interpretation, it kind of has to be long and specific. So that's the reason for it. But at the same time, you know, I probably draft one or two operating agreements a week and none of them are identical. Mm-hmm. You know, there's five or six things that are always kind of you have to make decisions about. And then there's a ton of other things that come up periodically. So there's similarities, but none of them, very rarely are they exactly the same as some other deal. You know, every situation is different, whether it be money, decision-making, who's involved, long-term goals, you know, so it's always different. And if it was the same, then, you know, it would be boring for us. And
you wouldn't have a job probably.
And yeah, you could just automate everything. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how much, you know, more and more legal services automation, you know, but is it going to work?
I don't know. I mean, humans, I guess until we get taken over by robots, I don't know. I have a question for you too. Let's change the view here of why Scott helps us, but Scott also helps us with our online business. Now, yes, you know, listeners, you know, Annette and I have to protect ourselves from the podcast standpoint. We have a membership, all that good stuff. But listeners, we encourage you all the time to have a website, like your digital real estate, and we talk about direct bookings. And so, Scott, can you chat with our listeners real quick in terms of that and how council can help them feel more comfortable booking directly, not using these online travel agencies like Airbnb, and that it's possible and it's something that's very approachable for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you're booking directly, you probably want to have some sort of agreement between you and your renter. And you can do this through terms of use is probably the way it's called most of the time. You want to have it on your website. You know, the old school would be to send a PDF and get it signed, but now you can do, you know, click through agreements. You can just host them on your website. And you know, people don't read them.
They don't read them.
Until things go wrong. And then they read them and then they interpret them however they want.
Right.
But you know, you want to make sure you've dealt with some of these things, whether it's, you know, how you're going to deal with deposits, you know, how you're going to deal with damage, you know, and you know, if somebody, I think one of the risks with doing it yourself, right, is so say you've got a property in Columbus and somebody comes in from, you know, Virginia and rents and they trash a place and then they leave, right? It's very hard to enforce mm-hmm. on that because they're in a different state. There's not a lot you can do about that. And that might be sometimes why there's a benefit to using like Airbnb. But then this is also why it's important to have insurance. Because if you're not going to be, you know, if you have enough damage where you might make a claim and you're never going to be able to go after that person, that's where insurance can come in. You know, I've done a few direct booking contracts and almost always there are new situations that are specific to that place that arise over time that have to be worked in. So it's the, you know, one size does not fit all for these. You know, just going and grabbing somebody else's terms can be a good starting place. You know, I certainly, if I have to draft a certain type of agreement, I'm going to go and get a few of them, look at them, see which one I like first and build from it. But at the same time, you can't be sure that somebody else's is going to be perfect for you and just copy and paste. You need to work through it. And then, you know, some of the concepts in there can get, you know, some of the more legalistic concepts, liability waivers and that kind of thing, you know, it can get confusing and you know, you may want help with it. You know, most entrepreneurs have a certain level of tolerance for doing this stuff themselves. And I think everybody needs to kind of find that line of doing it. I don't like to tell people that you have to send every single thing to a lawyer that even touches on anything contractual or legal. But, you know, as you develop your business and develop things, you kind of get a sense of when to do it, you know, and your attorney should be able to help you kind of recognize that as well.
Yes. Yes. And I think there's a building that foundation up front as you're building up your business that it is front loaded in terms of what you invest. But
That's
then over time, it ends up being this like, okay, now I contact my lawyer, you know, much less than at the beginning. But man, if you build that solid foundation, number one, you educate yourself mm-hmm. on what, you know, what is best practice. And and it helps you avoid getting into hot water down the line too. But and I think there have been times, unfortunately, and as a host, as a manager, where Airbnb didn't stand up for me. So you're right. Like, not only having your contract in place, but having your insurance know exactly what you're doing with your property so they can then, you know, be there for you when and if something tragic like that happens or, you know, frustrating. All right. Anything else, Addie?
I don't think so. So Scott, obviously you can't help everybody across the world. So let's let everybody know. Scott is here in Ohio. So talk us through, like, obviously you can't help everyone. So you can only help people in Ohio, correct? Or potentially.
So it depends on what it is. So I do have clients throughout the country for various things.
Okay.
But when it comes to anything related to buying property, mm-hmm. deeding property, and oftentimes doing forming an LLC and drafting an operating agreement for a specific state, you should use local counsel for those.
Gotcha.
So especially with transferring a deed, you're going to want somebody who's familiar with that state and really that county. Mm-hmm. And each recorder's office has its own quirks. And you want to make sure the deed's done right because it can really cause problems later if it's not.
Gotcha.
So for those things, you definitely need local counsel. For other stuff, it's not, you know, it's not as big a deal where the attorney is. You know, for instance, I do a lot of trademark registrations, and that's all federal work. Mm-hmm. And there's trademark companies online that are located in one place, and they'll do them anywhere over the
okay.
country.
I do have a question.
Doesn't make much difference.
I have a question about trademark really quick. Let's say someone has a property and they name that property and they mm-hmm. feel like either that property or like they want to, you know, continue to build something similar. I know I can think of a lot of people right now and they want to continue that concept across the US on different plots of land. Is that something that they should trademark? Like the name, what they're naming their property?
So I think
their brand.
If you have a brand that you're using for a number of properties or for management services or for something like Thanks for Visiting where you're doing you know, educational services, doing the podcast, I think a trademark makes a lot of sense. For a single property, technically you shouldn't be able to get a federal trademark in most circumstances because you're supposed to use it in interstate commerce in more than one state. So, you know, you have a property in Columbus, Ohio, unless there is some recognition of this property outside of Ohio, it's probably not really appropriate.
Okay.
Now the USPTO isn't going to look that closely, so you could probably still get it registered. But you know, at the same time, if you've got a property in Columbus and I suppose if you've got a trademark for a single property, it's because it's special, you know, it's
exactly.
huge, it's unique, something like that. Mm-hmm. It's like circus themed. I don't know. But somebody has a property in Arizona and they're calling the same thing. Is there an issue? I mean, it only if you think that's going to hurt you, would I pursue it?
Okay.
You can also do state trademarks with state offices to stop that just protects you in the state. It's a little bit easier to do that. So I would think with, you know, I haven't seen a ton of single property trademarks in general.
Right.
You know,
well, I'm just thinking people that have a brand, maybe it's
one
property they want to expand it. Yeah.
And you're kind of branding like in general, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
You know, if you're building a brand based on all of it.
Mm-hmm. And also with the direct booking site, in addition to the rental conditions, the rental agreement, what have you, should our listeners have like a terms and conditions just in general on their website about generally renting from us? Like, is that something that maybe a council could help with?
So I think that's an interesting question. So, you know, in theory, every website should have terms of use and privacy policy. It just covers, if you come to our website, here's the rules. And those rules are typically, you can't copy and take our stuff. We, you know, disclaim liability for anything we say. Everything we say is as is. No promised outcome.
Yeah.
So, and then a lot of times companies will have that and then an add-on terms when you actually make a purchase or something. Mm-hmm. But for, you know, for, that seems like a lot, like extra work for property rental. So I would probably just have one that covers all of the rentals and would include some of that other stuff that would typically be on terms of use or privacy policy. And a privacy policy is only for, you know, to promise to your users about what you're going to do with their personal information.
Right.
So like, you know, this is important for Facebook, eBay, Google, but for somebody that's got a single property, you know, it's not super important unless you're everybody that contacts you, you're going to sell their email address to some company, then you probably should disclose it. Okay. But the general advice would be, yes, you should have them. But at the end of the day, for that type of business, it's probably not a huge issue. You know, thanks for visiting Hudson, but you're doing these other things as well. You're doing, you know, educational stuff where you're interacting with people, you're selling other things, you're collecting more information, you're interacting with people more. So there it's definitely appropriate. But, you know, I don't advise people to do things unless they really need them.
Okay.
You know?
So if you're in Ohio, listeners, and you have a real estate or an operating agreement, we'll put Scott's information in our show notes. If you're out of Ohio and you have more intellectual property conversations, they could have that with you. Is that correct?
Yes. That's a good way to put it. Awesome. Anything real estate, you want to work someone local. But yeah, IP or you know, general business stuff, I can certainly do other places as well.
And we'll put Scott's information there. Again, one more disclaimer. Nothing on this show is any sort of legal advice at all. And that's covering ourselves.
Yeah, and I want to say, you know, you guys are being hyper transparent about this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of the things we've talked about, I would not ever tell anybody. But, you know, you wanted to discuss it and use it to discuss this process. So, you know, most of the time this stuff would never be disclosed to anybody. So,
Scott
even said that he listened to our episode about our deal and he's like, wow, you guys are pretty transparent. And we're like, yeah, it's important for us because our audience, we just feel there's so many people not telling the whole, there are some things we're going to keep, you know, to ourselves, like, you know, but for whatever we can share it, it's not going to have an adverse effect on something we're doing. You want to share with you so that you can
also when we share, I might not remember exactly what we're talking about. So that's another disclaimer too. I'm not an attorney. So if I say something, it might not be 100% accurate. Oh, anyways, but listeners, really, we encourage you this is an important part of your team. Like Scott said earlier, your legal, your accounting, and your insurance. Those need to be three of those really clutch team members. And it doesn't matter if you have one property or 100 properties, they need to be on your team.
Scott, thank you so much for your time. Listeners, my name is Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are.
Thanks for visiting. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. Head on over to the show notes for this episode at thanksforvisiting.me. If you're looking to take your listing to the next level and show your guests how much you care, be sure to check out our line of thoughtful hosting products, from hosting checklists to custom mugs to toilet paper stickers. We've got you covered. And if you love our show, remember, sharing is caring. Please hit that subscribe button and leave us a review. Awesome reviews help us bring you awesome content. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to hanging out with you next week. Thanks for visiting.
Ever wonder what it would be like to have personalized guidance from Annette and me? Imagine achieving the same incredible results we helped Amy achieve, increasing her overall revenue by a staggering 187% by diving into her biz numbers. Or perhaps you'd love to boost your hosting business like Miranda, who added a fantastic $10,000 by refining her pet policy. Well, here's a scoop. There's only one way to get that one-on-one support from Annette, myself, our expert coaches, and our industry pros,
is by attending our on-demand workshop. Trust us, it's worth it. During the workshop, we'll make an offer to all of our attendees to join our membership. Once you're a part of our exclusive membership, you'll gain access to our elite community of hosts in our private Facebook group. This is where the magic truly happens. Members are engaging in discussions about their business numbers, occupancy rates, how to handle guest challenges, and providing unwavering support to one another. Plus, we will have live coaching calls to help you dive deeper into portfolio growth, team building, marketing, and so much more. Don't wait any longer. Head on over to www.hostmasterclass.com right now to secure your spot and embark on this exciting journey with us. That's www.hostmasterclass.com. Trust us, you won't regret it.